All right, guys, I think we'll get underway now. So welcome in, guys. Good to have you all on board this morning and really excited about what we've got in store today. Big welcome to Rod Miller from Watermark. Good to have you on board, mate. And as I said earlier, really looking forward to hearing from you. Now, Rod owns a plumbing business in the mighty Wairarapa. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. And he's got over 40 guys, 40 people on the team. Was the Master Plumber of the Year in 2013, and he's got some fantastic advice and suggestions for us today, what to do, what not to do. So today is going to be a like an interview style session, so I'll ask some questions, Rod will respond and add what he thinks is helpful, and it's also an opportunity for us to be really interactive and ask plenty of questions ourselves. So if you want to ask a question as we go through today, then just raise your hand or put the question in the question box, and I can actually unmute you, and you can ask the question directly, so we can hear from you and keep it really interactive. And I really encourage you to ask plenty of questions, because then we can get down to the things that are most important for you today. So welcome aboard, Rod. Good to have you on board, mate. Mate, I guess kick off, just tell us how you got started and what you hope to achieve when you actually got into business for yourself.
Yeah, I guess once I'd done my time, I was sort of, I always knew I was going to actually start out on my own, and I'd sort of seen a bit of what had been going on around, and I guess my thought was I'd have a company that just covered anything that had anything to do with plumbing, and so if it had water attached or went on to it, we were going to try and do it to the best of our ability and just do away with the old. I thought that someone would ring up and you'd say, yeah, we'll be there after lunch, and you could almost hear them on the other end of the phone saying, you're right. So we treated every call right from day one as a priority.
Yep. So talk us through the stages that your plumbing business went through, right from when you cracked on out on your own, right through to where you're up to today.
I think probably you have the most growing pains when you're going from sort of one to five to, well, five or eight. You're not really sure whether you need another staff member on board, like a foreman, that's going to actually you look at it as being a drain on the company, but in fact it's totally the reverse when you think about it. But that's a big step. You know, once you get over that five or eight people on board, then you need to be able to step back a little bit and have a look at running the business and instead of trying to run each job and each tradesman. So it's really important that you actually get that person, that foreman that you're bringing on, he's got to be the right guy. He's going to be your right arm.
Sure thing. So, like, that's a big challenge, as you said. So what was it that helped you, you know, take that step from being yourself to two or three or four or five guys up to having some management in the business?
I guess ours was just sort of natural growth. It just happened. And I guess once you get in with some of your bigger contractors that you're working for, then that natural growth will just sort of will happen on its own. But you need to manage it, and that's where you need to be able to take a step back. And instead of working 80, 90 hours a week, which I was doing at some stage, you need to be able to pull back and say, hey, I need someone else to do this here while I concentrate on seeing where the business is and what steps I need to take next to actually make it go forward even further.
Okay. And what specifically, Rod, did you do in terms of working on the business that enabled you to make that step?
I mean, before you can go, you've obviously got to have the contacts that are going to that are going to generate the work for you, and that was my main thrust, was to actually get out there and try and make that happen. And I guess you've got to prove yourself once you actually get in bed with a contractor or an area, whether it be a district council or a hospital board or whatever. It's maintaining that standard of work, and that you just don't let them down, and we really focus on that, not letting people down at all.
Okay. So you've got to five or eight guys, and you've got a key guy in place who you can rely on. So how does business look, and what was the journey from there to now, where you've got sort of a team of 40 plus?
Yeah, I guess from there on in, it's just a matter of managing the finances more than anything. And there's always going to be growing pains around that as well, whether it's buying new vans, making sure that the workshop you've got is suitable for all the guys you've got. All of a sudden, instead of having a smoker room with three or four sitting around, you've got 20-odd guys sitting in there, and it's busting at the seams. And likewise with your workshop. But managing your outgoings and just making sure you've actually got enough money in front of you to actually keep that growth going, that's a biggie.
Okay. So we just caught up yesterday as well, mate, and we talked a little bit about the numbers and the financials, and that's obviously a massively important area to having a successful plumbing business. So can you talk us through what you do in your business to manage your numbers, both the profit, the pricing, and the cash flow?
Yeah, the numbers thing, we don't fluctuate very much. Even through the downturn, we lost, I think, about two guys through attrition. We didn't actually put anyone off. So we managed to actually go right through that pretty much unscathed. I'm not saying it was easy, but we managed to sort of scrape up a bit of work from other places that we hadn't sort of been looking at before, keep everyone on board and stay financial. But I look at it across the board. I look at our hire bill especially, and it's real easy for someone to go in and buy or hire a hammer driller or a breaker, and you know, if you've done that three or four times a month, you need to have a look at buying one. You can still hire it out, but that money's going in your back kick instead of the hire company. There's all sorts of little ways you can trim the fat and sort of load your bank account instead of someone else's.
Okay. And what are some ways, you know, with your numbers, the financial reports, etc., that you do that you've that's enabled you to put more money in your bank account?
I guess our reporting is, we're using Infusion as our business package, and the reporting on that's reasonably good. It's totally reliant, of course, on how fast the girls are punching the information in. So I can't get anything out until they start doing their end. But normally sort of 2 weeks into the month, I've got a fair idea of where we're heading. And then I'll go down and just have a look at the workload we've got in front of us for the rest of that month, whether we need to increase or where I think we're going from there. I have a weekly meeting with both my foreman and my purchasing officer, London, and we just sit down and sort of try and nut out, you know, if we've got perhaps one staff member that's got a few issues that we need to look at, or whether we've got a problem with one supplier that we need to look at, anything that could impact on how the business works or is going to function through the month and through the year. It's important they get involved because I just can't be everywhere, and I need to have their input as to exactly what's going on in the company.
Yep. Okay. Now, Tanya, you've just said we're all still muted. Do you want to ask a question there, Tanya? If you do, just put your hand up and I can unmute you. Okay, so I'll just unmute you. We've just got a question here. Rod, if that's okay.
Yeah, fine.
I'll just find. It's okay, Tanya. Have you got a question there for Rod? Can you hear me, Tanya? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're live. If you've got a question for Rod, just shoot ahead. Yep. Can you hear her, Tanya? Rod?
No, sorry, it's just that we couldn't hear anything.
Ah, okay. Oh, that's not very good. Can everyone else hear? Just let us know if you can hear. Yes. Yeah, everyone else can hear, Tanya. Maybe your speakers aren't on, mate, or...
It's okay, I can hear now. You
can't. Excellent. Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
Good stuff. Did you have a question at all, Tanya?
No.
Okay, well, we'll mute you again and you can hold that till later.
Thanks.
Okay. Sorry, Rod, carry on, mate.
Meeting with the staff and just keeping them informed and letting them report back to you is actually really important. I mean, there may be something I'm doing totally wrong that I need straightening out on, and that's just as important. You know, if they can bring something like that to my attention, then I need to look at that as well. And there's hardly a week goes by, really, where we don't have, where someone doesn't bring something up that we're going to try or implement, even if it's only on a trial basis. But, you know, at least we do react quite quickly to any change.
Okay. So how does your business look now? How is it structured? What people do you have in what seats? How's the office look? How do you structure the guys? What's your role? You know, how does it work now?
My role is pretty much, I do all the commercial or large job quoting, and I also do the overall management, obviously, financial management. I've got two ladies in the reception that take all the day-to-day jobs. I have a purchasing officer who also looks after the storeroom and plant,
yep.
Which is a biggie. He's kept pretty busy, I have to say. I have two foremen,
uh-huh.
And apart from that, one lady upstairs who does all the wages, very important part. Can't function without that.
Sure.
And we all get together, as I say, with our weekly meeting. We also have a monthly meeting where I get them all together, and we'll just, once everyone's off for the day, I'll get someone else in just to look after the office, and they can all have a go at me or chuck a bit of info around, and you actually get a lot of good feedback from those meetings, a lot of good feedback.
Yep, okay. And what sort of things do you find that comes up from the team that, you know, you might miss out?
It may just be, we had an issue a while back where the phone wasn't being answered enough, and I get a printout on how many missed calls we get,
yep.
And I brought it up and they said, well, yeah, you know, there's only two of us here, and if a line's still ringing, we can't pick it up. So we got Telecom to make it so that it flicks on to Vaughan's phone, who's sitting in an office nearby. And he'll get it, and our missed call rate went down by, I think, about 90%.
Right.
It wasn't
okay.
That high, as it was only about, I think, 9 for the month, but it's 9 calls you could have picked up.
For sure, okay, which could be work. So that's an interesting thing you're measuring there, you know, I guess a key performance indicator, the picking up of the phone. What are the other key measures or metrics, or whatever you like to call them, that you measure each month?
We always have a look at what jobs we've actually quoted, what tenders have been let, and then I'll get on the phone and start ringing some of the contractors and just seeing, hey, did we miss it, by how much, and just trying to get a little bit of information on it. It's no good just going out there pricing, doing the same old thing every day. If you're not going to pick up any work about it, you need to know how close you are to the mark. There are people out there doing some silly things at times, so you just have to flag that. But, you know, making a phone call to one of your, someone you've priced a job for isn't an embarrassing thing to do. It's actually a good thing to do.
For sure. Okay. And what do you look at, what do you do in terms of the margins that you're looking to generate? How do you keep a track of that?
I look at it two ways. I have a look at what our cost of our labour is, our total cost, and sometimes I'll include that in one package with materials as well, and we'll just margin that up. It's not a bad way of looking at some jobs, especially if things get a little bit tight. Otherwise, we're just labour plus, but you know, you can't do anything for any less than about 20 to 25%, and any of those that are still out there that are putting 10% margin on gear, honestly, it's just not going to work for you.
Sure. Okay. What do you do in terms of back costing? Because that's something we talk a lot about, making sure that the jobs have come in where you wanted them to come in, and identifying, you know, rubbish clients or areas of overrun. So how do you go about making sure your jobs are as profitable as you price them?
That's another thing we do at our weekly meetings. What I get the girls to do is just back cost everything. And we don't do every job, but we'll do selective jobs. And I can normally tell by the job cards coming through whether they're going to be a good one to do, or perhaps not quite a good, not quite so good. But I'll get them to do a good cross section of where they are, and we just take that along, and the guys can have a look and see where we're normally not too far off the mark, but you get some that you know, the targets move perhaps a little from when you originally priced it, which happens a lot these days.
Sure.
But at least it gives them the feedback as well, and they can see what the impact is just by one silly little change.
Sure. Okay. So we might just pause for a minute, Rod, and see if there's any questions that the guys have. Look, guys, if you've got any questions that you'd like to ask, then just put your hand up, and I can unmute you, or if you don't want to talk, that's cool. I can just read the question out. So if you have any questions for Rod at this stage, just put your hand up. Okay, so Damien, got a question. I'll just unmute you, mate. Can you hear me there, Damien? Hello, Damien. Can you hear me there, mate? I can't hear you, Damien, so if you can just write your question in the question box, then I can read it out. Now, Richard, you've got a question. Richard, can you hear me, mate? Not very well. Okay. Somebody's got, okay. So, question from Trish. Trish asks, so what work do you do, Rod? What's the niche or the speciality that you work in?
I guess we do a lot of commercial here. In fact, we probably do 90% of the commercial in Wairarapa. But apart from that, we've got a lot of rural work, new housing. We don't do any of the volume home builders work. Yep. And that was probably one of the reasons we didn't, the downturn didn't really impact on us. The people that still had $1 million plus to spend on a house still kept spending. You know, they kept building. We had about five houses still going right through that. Whereas the volume builders, they just basically folded up and stopped overnight. I have two guys that are just doing general maintenance every day.
Yep.
I have three gas fitters that are either one's on maintenance, the other is normally new installations.
Yep.
We have two lots of trucks and diggers and two teams working on them with wastewater systems and the like. And the rest is just general plumbing, really. But we do, commercial is probably our main thrust.
Okay, so commercial. So Duncan, sorry, don't have a mic, so he can't talk, so that's not much help. But how many staff did you have before you needed a foreman to free yourself up?
I think I went to about eight, but I have to say at that stage I was just about doing backward somersaults. You know, I was doing some massive hours, and I don't think I'd advise that to anyone these days, really, to be quite honest. But, you know, once you get to about, I don't know, five, six, you should be able to have that, the ability to be able to do that. And from then on, you'll just find the growth actually comes, because it frees you up to actually do a whole lot of other amazing things, like get around and talk to your customers and things like that, which, which you've really got, you know, you've got to stay in touch with them. You want repeat business, otherwise you're going to run out.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, that's really important that you actually take that step.
Yep. So, look, our experience and coaching guys, and I guess what you're saying is, if you don't take that step, which is a bit of a leap of faith sometimes,
yep,
what will actually happen is your business will just stop growing.
Yeah, stop growing, and I think you'll even more than stagnate. You'll probably find yourself even going backwards, because the hours that you've got to put in to produce the work for that number of people, there's a hang of a lot involved in it, you know, and you can have a foreman that's doing a bit of your day-to-day pricing for you, which frees you up to do a bit of the other pricing, and it's amazing how much work one other set of arms and legs that are switched on to the game can actually produce for you.
Okay, cool. So Richard's got a question. Richard says, "What was the 25% you were referring to? Is that your gross profit margin, or is that a markup on materials?"
It's a margin. And as I say, sometimes I'll work it out, including your labour. It just depends what the market is you're actually stretching into at that stage.
Sure. So it varies depending on the type of job.
That's right. And it is a combined, it's all relevant to your bottom line at the end of the day.
Okay. So Nigel's got a question. Hang on, where are we? It's disappeared. Are your foreman on the tools or part of the admin team? And then do you have site foreman as well?
No, both foremen are off the tools. They do quite a lot of pricing as well as get around the jobs. It's pretty much a full-on job. They do carry tools, so if there's anything that they need to do while they're out there, then it can be done. But realistically, no, they're not on the tools.
So if you, I guess what I've found quite often with people coming through our program, they might get up to 15, 20 guys, and they've got a foreman or one and a half foreman. And one of the challenges is that foreman starts to get sucked back onto site all the time as well, just like you had as an owner at 5 to 8 guys. How do you manage that challenge?
It's easy. You don't buy them a van. You buy them something that's got a small boot in the back and they can only fit a few tools in it.
Happy days. Problem solved, chaps. Okay. So any other questions at this stage for Rod before we carry on? Okay, excellent, guys. So Rod, what have been the biggest frustrations or challenges for you along the way, and how have you dealt with those?
I guess probably the biggest challenge anyone's going to have is getting the right staff. And, you know, you've probably all tried advertising and get nothing. We're a little bit fortunate here. We can drag a few from over the hill. There's a few that like the lifestyle over here instead of the hustle and bustle in the city. But we do a lot of training. You know, we've always got 3 or 4 apprentices going, and people at times get a little bit scared of apprentices, but, you know, they can make your money from the day you start when you haven't got a tradesman digging a trench from one side of the building to the other. You know, he's doing it, and you're still charging him out. And as I said yesterday, Tony, you just can't rely on everyone else to train staff for you. You need to start doing it yourselves.
Okay. So with the apprentices, what are some other ways, mate, that you can make them as profitable as possible, as quickly as possible? What are you guys, what strategies do you put in place?
It's just a matter of putting them on jobs that they are chargeable. I mean, no one will sort of flinch at paying for someone if they can see him actively working. But if he's sitting there looking over someone's shoulder while he's working, then they're probably going to say, should I be paying for that guy or not? But, you know, there's always jobs out there, whether it's replacing water mains. There's an array of jobs that you can actually get an apprentice involved in that he's going to be chargeable.
Okay. And what do you do with your setup to make sure that they're busy and making money, but also that they're getting the training they need and the time they need from the tradesmen to pick up the skills?
Yeah, what we do with any reasonable size job, we'll just pick on one of the apprentices and he'll go with that tradesman on that job from start to finish. So whether it be a house or it be a new hospital extension or whatever, one of those apprentices or at least one of them will be on that job from start to finish. And then we just rotate them. As another one comes up, we get one of the other ones onto it. Because it is important they get a good cross-section of what they're going to be doing in the industry.
Sure. Okay. Now, obviously you said hiring staff is a big challenge, and a lot of our guys, you know, that's a challenge as well. So, you know, you're going to need to train staff. What have you found works for you in terms of hiring staff? And how do you go through the process so that, you know, you don't get muppets, you get good guys? Just walk us through what you do there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the interview process is quite difficult, really. It's not until you've got them on the job majority of the time that you can actually tell. Like you can talk to someone on the phone, you can talk to them in person, and some people are very good at selling themselves, I have to say. but it's not until they're actually on the tools that you're there. And we're very lucky now that we've got this 3-month trial thing that we can use, and we're quite open about that. I mean, we're as much on trial as what they are when they start, so put your best foot forward, and if it doesn't work out, then you probably won't be here at the end of the 3 months.
Okay. Do you do a job, like a trial, before you hire them as part of the interview process to see how they go on site?
No, we use that 3-month system, Tony, for that. We do contact their previous employer and just try and get a little bit of background on them, but sometimes that's a little bit scratchy as well. But I honestly believe the 3 months you're going to have there on site pretty much tells a story.
Okay, so it's almost like an extended job interview.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, and what do you do to make your business stand out? Because one of the things that is important these days with, a tradesman are not a dime a dozen, I guess, is to make our business as attractive as possible and an employer of choice. So what do you do, to make Watermark like a really, really good place to work from the outside for people?
Our vans are a big selling point for the company. They're well sign written, and when you've got, I think we've got about 45 of them running around town somewhere, hopefully today as well. Then you'll always get people say to you, "Oh, I see your bloody vans everywhere. You know, how many you got?" And that creates a little bit of banter. And the only other thing I do is I have local radio advertising. Mm-hmm. I don't spend a lot on it, but you can get a yearly package, and it's just an awareness thing. And they change it. I can change it every week if you want, but I change it every month to bring in another part of the industry. So it might be plumbing and drainage this month, and then we might go to gas and roofing. It's not an expensive way to advertise, and you have got that recall every day. I think we're on about 5 different stations, and that costs you about $300 a month.
Okay. And so you find that helps for awareness when looking for guys as well?
I think it does. Most of them know where the business is now and the size of it and the like. So when I get someone walking the door, they've pretty much got an idea of what we're all about anyway.
Okay. And what would you say to some guys who perhaps aren't quite as big and don't have as much recognition, maybe they've got 5 to 10, 12 guys, to make their business attractive? What is it that you think tradesmen want from an employer?
Look, I think we expect honesty from our employees, and you've just got to be exactly the same as an employer. Excuse me. And if they're getting that and you're talking to them as a one-on-one, then I think they'll respect that. You know, I mean, A, they're going to respect the company anyway for the size it is, because no one's just going to turn up with 20-odd staff overnight. So that there's obviously a reputation there, and it's been built on a basis of something. So they're going to be thinking they're walking into something pretty smart anyway, and all you have to do is make sure that you're actually talking to them and giving them an honest face-to-face sort of view of how the company operates.
Yep. And once you've got guys on board, what do you do to, get the best out of them, motivate them, keep them accountable, get them to stay longer, I guess?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. Yeah. We have a pretty active social club. Yep. It's run by a couple of characters that work for us, I have to say, and they do things from paintball to go-karting. There's always something on the go, and it's really important, getting that little bit of out-of-work communications with your mates sort of thing, and that works really well. I see Plumbing World are trying to get together what they call the Young Plumber Club, which is sort of a way of getting those young fellas out doing something and keeping them interested in the industry, and I hope that works for them.
Okay, so, guys, if you've got any questions around the hiring and firing and how to get the best out of the guys, then it might be good time now just to ask those questions, and we can put those to Rod. So just give you a few seconds to write those down. There is a question here from Damien. Oh, my question panel's disappeared. So, Damien, you had a question there, mate? Do you want to just... There we go. Okay. Do you advise to hire staff before you have work for them, or to get the work and then hire? So that's a really good question, actually. That's a great question. So do you get staff first and then find the work, or do you find the work and then get staff?
I guess in the environment we're working in here, either or is probably going to work for you, but it's probably best if you've got the staff on board first. That way you can actually honestly go out and actively hunt the work and be 100% sure that you're going to keep that person happy. There's nothing worse than actually promising work and then you haven't got anyone to turn up to do it. That would be disastrous.
Sure. And I guess as a addition, looking at guys growing their business, you need to have a think about how busy you are right now. So you might have four guys, but three of them are doing 10 to 15 hours overtime a week. You've already got a full-time position there. So worrying about filling it sometimes is not as bad as we think. And what tends to happen is if you don't have the resources, you don't get to a lot of work and you're actually stifling the growth of the business. Is that something you've found, that you actually turn work away and then you're actually stopping the business growing?
Well, we never turn work away, and sometimes that's one thing. I probably have a few, wouldn't say arguments, but discussions with some of my staff at times. A job will come in and I'll say, we can't do it. And I'll say, yes, we can. I'll just take it. Then we find who we can pull off a job and get the job done. Nothing gets turned down. And so it's something that if we can't find someone out of 40-odd guys to go and repair a ball cop urgently that's overflowing in the ceiling, then we've got a major problem.
Okay, so basically take the work and then figure out how to make it happen.
Absolutely, because you always will in the end. There's always a way around it. And I've never been stymied yet where I thought, Christ, I've got myself in a hole here. How am I going to dig out of this one?
Okay. So, guys, if you've got any other questions around the, or if you want to put your hand up or ask a question around the staffing, how to hire them, how to structure it, just flick them through. So, no questions there. All right, let's carry on then, guys. So, what have been the biggest lessons, mate, that you've learnt, Rod? What's the biggest lessons, and what would you potentially do differently next time if you had to do this all again?
I'd probably start growing a little bit earlier and putting someone in a little bit earlier. Because I've put myself through a hell of a lot of stress for no real reason at the end of the day when you sit back and think about it.
Yep.
But it's just making that commitment, and I know another vehicle and someone that's not going to bring any money in is a concern to a lot of people. But at the end of the day, that guy does end up bringing a lot more money in than you can actually imagine. That's probably the only thing I can really say. I mean, you need to be really tight with a supplier as well, or all your suppliers, and stay close with them. Sometimes things go a little bit haywire and you need to be able to tap them on the shoulder and make sure they're gonna assist you where needed. Belonging to Master Plumbers, as I said yesterday, Tony, it's just that networking thing. You've always got someone you can bounce views off, plus they have an array of different forms you can just download for nothing from their website. It's quite invaluable, really. You can spend an awful lot of money looking for compliance forms online when they're all freely available to you on one website.
Okay, cool, mate. So just have a couple of questions here. One from Richard. What are you paying your top plumbers? Waiting for that question.
Yeah.
What do you think you need to pay guys as well is probably the question as well.
It's very hard to justify paying someone over $30 an hour. Now, I've sat down with some of my top guys and we talk about it openly. Mm-hmm. If you get over that $30 an hour, then you have to look at, are we looking at some sort of contract operation here? Because paying wages at over $30 an hour is very, very difficult to recover, as you would all know. But that's where I see a bit of a plateau, around the $30 to $31.
Okay. And how is that playing out at the moment? Because there is, you know, there's a bit of a shortage of guys. It's, you know, you've got to look hard to get good guys. Do you see any pressure in margins to the customer so that we can maintain that balance, or how do you see that playing out with what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, there is a little, but I guess at the last Master Plumbers meeting, this very question came up, and everyone is normally quite free about sharing what their charge out rates are, and it's not really top secret. And most of them are of the same opinion. So if we're all on that same playing field, then it shouldn't really impact on anyone.
Okay. Now, Trish has a question. Do you have a phone script for the office staff when they're taking day-to-day work calls?
We do. We have several, in fact. The girls probably know them all off by heart now, but there's a few things that they need to drop in there, like, A, is the person that's ringing up the homeowner, or do they just rent the house? We need to know that pretty much straight away. And then we can have a look on their account quickly and just make sure there hasn't been a bad debt there from way back that we've had to write off or anything silly like that. So it's really just getting all as much information as we can take out of them, so as the guys going to do the job are pretty much aware of what they're going to.
Okay. Now, you touched on the cash flow collection side of things, which is an important area. So structuring that is obviously critical to not getting cash flow problems. What do you guys at Watermark do to structure the process of getting paid so that, you know, you're not left in the lurch?
Yeah, we have, if we go into the second month, then they would automatically get a letter produced, and then if it goes into the third month, they'll get a phone call plus another letter. In fact, they get two phone calls within that month. This is just for general customers, not commercial or a lot, but after that, I don't muck around with them. We're not a debt collecting company, we're a plumbing company, and they go straight to a debt collector.
Okay, awesome. And what do you do in terms of getting payment on completion or taking deposits?
We take a deposit based on the amount of materials going to be used on the job. Uh-huh. Now, the reason I say that is you can have a job where it may not be a huge job, but the material cost that you're going to actually have to buy in, it may be a $3,000 vanity and a $4,000 shower or a spa bath or whatever. It's no good just getting 10% of the whole job. It's the labour side of that's probably not going to be that high, but you want to gain a fair whack of that just in case things go a little bit pear-shaped, and at least you've got your materials covered. So in a case like that, we'd probably go over 50% with that. 9 times out of 10, or our standard is 20% deposit.
Okay, awesome. And people pay that no problem?
Not a problem. If they have a problem paying it, then I'd hazard a guess they're probably going to have a problem paying it further down the track as well.
So what else, what other, if any, tools do you use to qualify people like that so you don't have problems down the track?
I guess the main one is the house owner part. You know, if you know they own the house, then at least you're on a good start, and you're not going to have the owner of the house ringing you up saying, what the hell are you doing to my rental property? But
sure.
It's just a history thing, I think, that you build up, especially in a smaller area like this.
Yep. Okay. So what are the mindset shifts that you've had to go through, Rod, in terms of how you look at business and life to take your business to the next level? And what was it that helped you make those shifts as well?
I guess it was the hours I was putting in, as I said before, Tony. You know, it actually does hinder you actually going any further. You think, Christ, you know, is this worth it? You know, I'm working myself to the bone sort of thing. And then you sort of take on those next steps with another foreman, and your staff goes up again, and you find yourself back now. Like, I work probably 3 or 4 days a week now. Today's my golf day, but I've taken it off to talk to you.
Oh, you're a good man.
And things do become a lot easier, but you do have to be very focused on making sure you've got the right people that are going in to do the job. And that's all based on the market you intend attacking as well.
Okay. What was it that helped you make those shifts, mate? Was it pain? Did you, you know, were there some people or education you got for yourself or people you connected with and networked with? What was it that helped you learn and you know, look at things in a different way? Because some plumbers never make the change. They, you know, they're 60, 70 still running around in a van.
Yeah, I guess it's a while back now, but there weren't really a lot of people to bounce it off back then. But I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and all I had to do was actually make sure it functioned correctly. And so I'd look at how it was functioning every month, and it's easy enough. You can see the pitfalls in your own company quite quickly.
Yep.
But it's a matter of keeping an eye on that and reacting to it when you see it happening.
Okay. What is it that you think allowed you to do that, whereas some guys really struggle to make that jump?
They probably don't want to do it enough, because you've really got to want to do that. To actually take it to the next step. A lot of them are, and I hear it quite often, you know, yeah, I thought about doing that, but, you know, I'm just not sure. You really need to want to do it. And it would be real easy for me to probably knock 5 or 6 staff off, and my life would be even easier now. But we've got no one sitting around, and the company functions really well, so there's no necessity.
Okay. So, guys, if you've got any questions at this stage about, you know, the process of change in your business or looking about it in a different way, it'd be a good time to just pop them down. And if, you know, any questions you have for Rod about what he thinks you should do in your situation, if you want to ask specifically about that, then please put those questions down. And while you're doing that, we'll just talk about the work-life balance thing, mate. Tell me about how life is now for you, what you do, and whenabouts in the growth of your business you felt like you actually had this thing under control and that it was working for you rather than sort of the tail that was wagging the dog?
Yeah, I guess it was probably a good 10 years of hard slog to get there.
Yep.
And then it sort of plateaued off and things became a lot easier. When you've got people walking in the door talking to you rather than going out chasing them, it makes life a hell of a lot easier, I can tell you. And once you've sort of had that little bit of a program running or an education thing running and your advertising starts paying off and you've got the staff that can react and go and do work straight away, all that sort of banter gets around an area quite quickly. And, you know, we've got contractors now that we probably aren't the cheapest price, but I can almost be 100% sure we'll get the job. I don't screw them over. They get a good fair price. We do a hell of a lot of negotiated contract work now, whereas we'll just sit down with the contractor and say, hey, there's my quote, there's my spreadsheet, how it all goes together. Any questions? No? Done. We probably do, I guess I'd do probably about 5 or 6 of them a month.
Okay.
And most of them
so
are not
small. So that's enough for commercial work mainly?
Commercial and housing, yep.
Okay. So business to business.
Yep.
Okay. So we've got a couple of questions here, mate. Do you buy or lease vehicles for the fleet? That's from Trish.
That's a really good one. That's a really good question. I own all my vehicles. Now, I had a good mate of mine that had quite a large business here in town, and he was did a lot of dairy work and pub work, and Dennis decided he was going to lease his vehicles, and he had about 8 or 10 of them on the go. The dairy industry took a little bit of a dive. This is a few years back. He was stuck with these bloody vehicles in the yard. They weren't going to take them back, and he was paying out
some
substantial dollars for 3 or 4 vans sitting in the yard doing nothing. My accountant and I have sat down on many occasion and talked about it. And own your vehicle if you can. You can't beat it, honestly. When you get a little bit of a slow time, it doesn't matter if you park it in the shed if you own it. But if you're still paying money out for it, that hurts.
Okay. Okay, so it gives you more flexibility.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thanks, Trish, for that. Now, Duncan, when you hired a foreman, did you hire from within the company or seek trained outside options? So do you look to grow them internally or do you look to get them from outside?
I really look from outside. No disrespect to the guys in the company, but if I do that, then one of my good guys are going to be taken off the tools and I've got to find someone to replace him. So it's... You know, it just goes around in circles and it actually gets really, really difficult. Fortunately, I've never had one of the guys come and say, shit, I'm going to leave if I don't get this foreman's job, you know. There's been people express interest, but I've just explained to them, you know, I can't afford to not have you on the tools, and they're quite happy with that.
Okay. And what do you look for in a foreman? So what sort of experience, background, characteristics are you looking for?
He's got to have a pretty good background in the industry that we're in. He's got to have very good people skills because you're dealing with a whole lot of different personalities. It's very easy to get one of the guys offside just by saying something a little bit strange about his workmanship or whatever.
Yep.
So having those personal skills is very important. They need to be very good at reporting. I like to have a report every month on each job that they're actually looking after. Mm-hmm. And I guess just a totally organised person, really.
Okay, cool.
Someone that writes things down on the back of a cigarette packet isn't going to do the job.
Okay. So we've got a question here from Richard. So Richard's question is, Rod, what is your exit strategy?
That's another very good question. My accountant asked me that every year I go and see him. I guess it's no secret that the company has been on the market for a wee while, and that was really just to test the water. My accountant said we need to know sort of what's going on with it and whether it is saleable or what's going on. We know where it sits now, and we know what we can do with it, so there's that option there. But I'm looking at perhaps something a little bit different now, which has been done by a couple of Christchurch operations, and getting shareholders in from the staff and within the company.
Yep.
So that's another option I'm looking at the moment.
Okay. That's actually a very interesting point because there's a few of the guys on the call today and a few of the members of the program who offer ownership. And we've found that an excellent way to recruit people as well.
Yeah.
Because they get the benefit of owning a business without all the headaches of the back office hassle, which typically they're not very good at.
True.
So, yeah, that's a good option. And some of them are, they sell 20% maybe to three or four guys, or it might be 40%, and then you've still got control, but you've got people who are buying in and got skin in the game. So be interesting to hear how you go with that one.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. let's talk about marketing then, Rod, because to grow a business to 40, a team of 40, you need good, consistent workflow. So what have you done that's worked really well for you to grow that client base? You there, mate? We just missed you there for a minute.
Yep, thank you.
Yep,
and what happened
there? Okay, did you hear the question?
No, I missed it, sorry.
Okay, so the question was to grow your business from where you started to 40, a team of 40 plus, you need good consistent workflow and reliable consistent leads. So what have you done to market your business over the years? What's your marketing system? What's worked? What hasn't worked? What would you suggest people try?
I guess it comes down to selling yourself as well as the company. And here we've got probably five main contractors in town. Mm-hmm. And I went and saw each one of them. And now we work for all of them. I'm not saying we do all their work, but at least we're getting a look at all their work and we're getting a chance to do their work. Probably two
so
of
that's
them.
So contractors, you're talking building contractors?
Building contractors, yeah. So Look, you can put an ad on the radio and you can do whatever you like, but there's nothing better than to face up and say, hey, this is who I am, this is what I do, give me a chance, we'll prove ourselves. And that's pretty much what I did. And, of course, as I've said, once you've done that, then it's the challenge is to maintain that and make sure you keep your promise.
Okay. So a lot of it has been relationship marketing for you?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay. And what's the, you know, how have you gone about that? How long did it take? What did you have to do? Did you have to kiss bums? Did you have to, you know, kiss babies, give flowers, whatever? that probably wouldn't work, but, you know, each to their own. So what was the process you went through, and how do you stay in touch with people? Because sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, it does. I make a point of visiting those five companies at least every second or third month. At Christmas, I always drop them around a ham and a few bottles of wine. I talk to them probably every other day because, well, I am actually doing the pricing for them in that commercial area. Yep. So once you've actually got your foot in the door and they're quite comfortable with the way you operate, it actually becomes quite easy. When if you were relying on one-off jobs, you're going to run out sooner or later. So you need to have that repeat business and make sure that you're going to get a crack at everything that comes along.
Okay. And so what have you, I think you've probably alluded to it earlier, but how have you found the whole price thing versus relationship thing, and have you found as you build the relationship, actually the price equation becomes less of an issue?
It does, actually. I mean, you can't afford to go in with a sledgehammer, but it does make your margins a little bit better. And when they can see it on the paper as well, you know, look, as I say to them, we've all got to make a dollar, otherwise we're not going to be here next year. So you'll be looking for someone else or whatever, you know. And that goes right down to our suppliers. You know, you can screw your supplier down as much as you can, but you don't want them to fold up either because you need them to carry on. So as long as we're all making a fair dollar, I think we should all be happy.
Okay. So what would you say to the guys out there who say, oh, look, everyone's just, you know, shopping based on price? What would be your suggestion to them?
Yeah, I made a pretty hard stand about 6 years ago that we weren't just an installer of product. So if someone went to Bunnings or Mitre 10 or whatever, look, don't bother ringing us to put it on, find someone else. And everyone thought I was bloody mad, to be quite honest, but it's worked so in our favour, it's not funny. Now they know if they want to, they want something, they can come in here, they'll probably get it for about the same price. It'll be a good product, and we'll install it and give them a warranty as well. So, you know, these cash and carry companies, especially with plumbing gear, they are a real pain in the butt, but you've got to be a little bit staunch with them at times and make a bit of a stand.
Okay. So it's not just about price, is it?
No, not at all. It's about an overall package, and honestly, everyone will remember the good service they got. It's just something that sticks out. Doesn't matter whether you take your car to a garage, you always remember whether he's done a good job and he gets down, he's vacuumed the front of it, and you get it back and it's in good nick. You know, you remember those little things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I often tell the story of you go, you know, looking for a restaurant, you walk along the strip, which restaurant do you want to eat at? It's typically not the one that's empty, which has got crap all over the tables, but it's cheap, is it?
No.
It's typically the nice one where there's lots of people and you have to wait.
That's the one.
Yep. Okay. So what, Roy, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing plumbing and the construction industry right now?
I think the biggest challenge is going to be staffing.
Yep.
There is going to be a shortage. We've just gone so many years without a lot of training going on that it's got to impact, and anyone sort of looking at growing their business needs to start looking at that side of it, like right now.
Yep.
Things are going to pick up, they're going to get good, and you're going to have the opportunity to make a lot of money, but you've got to be ready for it. And I would suggest having a look at an apprentice is not a bad idea.
Okay. Yep. So what are you guys planning to do to meet that challenge?
As I say, we normally keep at least three or four apprentices at any one stage anyway. So we'll probably be doing exactly the same. We definitely won't be slowing down in that area.
Okay, cool. Now, guys, if you've got any more questions, a good time to put them in the question box. It generally takes a minute or two for them to come through. So any questions about marketing or the staffing or the challenges in the plumbing industry, please chuck them down and we'll get them to Rod and he can answer them, which would be fantastic. So, mate, what would be the three biggest lessons for plumbers who are stuck now and can't seem to find their way forward but really want to take their business to the next level, from having, you know, several tradesmen to actually being a business, you know, being a business owner rather than just really a foreman?
I guess, A, you've got to really make up your mind whether you do want to get bigger, you do want to actually strike out and do it. Secondly, you need to have a look at the market that you're going to want to expand in. Is it a big wide focus like I've done here, or are you going to actually just pick on a particular part of the market and specialise in that? And there's nothing wrong with that if you want to do that, and there's enough work for it. But there are probably two of the major things you have to look at, because a lot of people would say, yeah, I'm thinking I might get, you know, I might put on some more staff. Yep. It's all very well thinking that, but what are you going to do with them when you got them? You know, where are you targeting the work? How are you going to actually go about getting it? And I think that's the main focus you've got to have if you're going to try and grow your business.
Okay. So that's, I guess, to summarise that, one is get really clear on what you actually want.
Yep.
And have a burning desire to make it work. And two is, who am I going to target and how am I going to get the work from that area? Is that...
It's just about bang on.
Yep. There you go. Happy days. Okay. Got a question here from Caden. So, g'day Caden, good to have you on board, mate. So, question for Rod. How many plumbers did you have employed before getting an admin staff member, and how many hours a week did they work? This is a massive area, mate. Like, we've got, on our program, we've got a few guys around that 4 to 6 plumbers, and then, you know, some guys with more than that. And that whole admin area is a big sort of thing. So how would you see that being structured ideally?
Yeah, and that's a very good question, because look, if you haven't got that area working properly for you and you're trying to do a bit at night and the phone's not being answered properly and there's a whole lot of other crap in the background going wrong, then you probably need one right now. And I would suggest if you've got 5 staff, then you need someone actually doing a bit of that. You know, you can actually get someone sitting there doing quite a bit of work for not a lot of money these days.
Okay. How many hours a week do you think would be, if you had 4 or 5 guys, would you expect from an admin person? And what would you expect that admin person to be able to do for you?
I would expect that person to probably work the 40 hours. Yep. I would want them answering the phone properly, because there's a lot of guys around that are still taking calls on their cell phone, and they've got, you know, 5 or 6 guys on the tolls. So you need to sharpen up the end, so when they do call in, they're actually answered properly, and you haven't got your head up down at Dunny or something trying to talk to a prospective customer that's going to spend...
Yeah, you can mate. Hang on.
And that's actually a big part of the growth too, because it'll just start happening. You'll probably get jobs that you never even knew or ever rung in before.
Yep. Okay, cool. So if you've got any other questions around that area, guys, just flick them through as well. Okay, so any other big lessons, mate, that we touched on, the get clear on what you want and who you're focusing on?
No, I think just when you're sitting down with your accountant at the end of the year as well, or whenever you go and see him, just fire plenty of questions at him, mate. These guys get a little bit headstrong at times, and they sort of brush over a lot of stuff that you really need to know about. And just ask them, you know, have we got any other options in this, that, or the other? Are we getting as much tax back on the whatever? But you just need to really put them through the ringer, right? Because honestly, they're there just to make the books ring you up at the end of the day and send you a bill. You can actually save yourself quite a bit of dollars.
Yeah, I think that's huge. Yeah, a lot of guys go to the accountant, I guess, and listen to him for an hour and basically understand nothing. It's like head, you right. nod your head because you don't want to feel like a, you know, like a tool, basically. So I guess we've all done that at some stage. So yeah, that's a huge part of, I guess, what we try and do through the financials education we give here as well, to understand what profit is and what a margin is and how cash flow works. So make sure you watch those financial webinars, guys, because they'll make sure you can kick the accountant around. Happy days. Okay. What about your job card process, mate? That's so I've got a couple of questions here for from a couple of people, John and Mark, about job cards, because they're tearing their hair out about them. So how do you get your guys to fill them in accurately and process them accurately?
Yeah, I can understand all that. As you can see, I've torn all my hair out and I'm still having problems. So it's probably one of the hardest ones to answer. I mean, I've had a look at having them electronically on their phones or and a like, but at the end of the day, if they can't fill one in paper correctly, you're not actually achieving a hell of a lot by getting them to sit down and try and do it on an iPad. But there's a lot of checking. I mean, I still see every job card that goes out of the office. So once they've been processed and before they get punched, they come to me and I'll go through every job card. And I still pick up errors in them all the time. You've just got to keep banging it into the guys, eh, and tell them it's a part of their job. You know, it's got to be in their job description. They must do it. There's no other way of doing it. No one can do it for them. They're there, they've got the van, they know whether they've taken 1, 2, 3, or 9 crops nuts out of the back and used them or whatever. You need to really just hammer it home with them.
Yep. I guess it's a bit like having kids in some ways. You have to keep them accountable and tell them to pick the shit up all the time.
Yes,
one of the things I find, mate, and I'm not sure if you've got anything to add, is if you have the right help in the office, that can really help staying on top of that stuff, because if you're balls out and trying to cover that all off after hours, your care factor and your ability to kind of focus really goes down.
Yeah.
Because you've basically had enough, you just want to get home.
Yeah. We use our storeroom and our showroom or van, whatever, we treat it like another outlet. So anything they take from there, they write out an order form for as well. So they don't just take anything out of the store or out of the, they need to actually attach an order to it, to the job card. And that works pretty well. You know, there's still errors there and I pick them up all the time. You still get someone on the job card, went to replace a 180-litre hot water cylinder, they put all the crocs nuts and all down, but no hot water cylinder. But, hopefully the invoice comes through and you marry that up anyway. But, that, you know, that's the silly sort of things they do, and you're never ever going to stop that, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think, like, technology can help. I know you're not using the paper, but other, you know, the handheld devices. A lot of our guys are and having a lot of success with that. But at the end of the day, it's actually just about the most important part of your business. It's where the engine room is, the profit's made by making sure you charge everything out. So it's something that does require constant attention, isn't it? I mean, you can't really ever get away from that.
Absolutely.
The way you get away from it, I guess, is training your team in the office to start picking some of that stuff up as well.
And that's what they do. I mean, the girls do pick a lot of it up. When they're putting the job cards and invoices and all together and orders together with the job cards, then they do pick up a lot of that. But it's just a matter of training the guys. And I mean, I've probably only got about 2 or 3 now that I really have to keep a constant hammer on.
Okay, cool. So in the office, mate, just tell us about what systems you have, what manuals and operating procedures or how-to manuals you have to make sure things get done the way you want to.
We have a job card system, as we've just talked, and we have a priority list. Yep. And then we have a weekly list, so we'll find out whether it's a priority and got to be done today, or it's got to be done within an hour, or it's got to be done within half an hour. That'll go into that list, and the girls will monitor that with the next guy in or ring him on site and tell him he's going straight there with the next job. Yep. We also e-text a lot out of the office as well, so they'll text the tradesman, and he'll get that on his phone to go straight to XYZ. There's a block drain or whatever. once those job cards go out with the guys, they write all the gear on the back of it, or and then attach the orders and anything else that needs to be attached to it. They get put in a bin every night. One of the girls actually pulls them out in the morning and goes through each one of them and tries to marry them up with the plumbing order invoices that she's just printed off, or anything else that needs to be sorted with it. And they'll then come to me to be checked over.
Okay. And do you have a like an administration manual or a operations manual where you've got the systems written down so that new people coming in can see how things are done and it's written down?
Yeah, we don't have a huge turnover in staff, and we have got a procedure that it all works on, but it's almost like a living document. You know, it changes weekly, just about. You know, should that's not working at the moment, should we try this? You know, and we've been doing that for as long as I can bloody remember, and it'll probably continue as well.
Okay.
But, yeah, nothing as such, no.
Okay. So I got a question from Nigel here. Nigel, what do you do about stock control on the vehicles? Do you have a template or maximum amounts you're happy with them to carry? So how do you manage the stock in the vehicles?
Yeah, we have a minimum maximum for, especially for the guys that are doing the jobbing work. It's quite important that they have a different array of gear than the guys out doing contract work. And they get stock take every 3 months. So every 3 months will be a total stock take done on the vehicle.
Yep.
And it should be the same as what it was left in when it was loaded up.
Okay. Awesome. And how much stock do you keep in the workshop? Or do you try and just...
We've got quite a good setup, really. I mean, it's... we probably keep way more than we should do, but because we do a lot of weekend work and call-out work as well, it's quite important that we have that sort of gear there that we can draw on rather than trying to get Plumbing World or one of the other guys out in over night time.
Okay, awesome. So, guys, we're coming to the end of the session with Rod. So if you've got any questions you want to ask, now's a really good time to get them down. It can be about anything, about marketing, you know, how to hire guys, what sort of team you need, pricing, anything like that, throw them down and we can get them to Rod before we finish up.
Just with that, Tony, there's about 150Ks worth of stock we're stocking the we have in the
okay. In the workshop.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. And it varies for different businesses. If some guys are more provincial, so they need more stock as well, or some are in the metropolitans, which is easier to get hold of stock. So okay, so guys, if you've got any questions, just chuck them down. If you haven't, that's cool. But we'll finish up in a minute, and love to get all your questions out before we finish up. Okay. So if there was, just a last question, mate, what is the one thing that you think, if you're looking at a young guy who's in business, well, not necessarily a young guy, but you know, he's got a business that wants to grow, and you look at him, what is the one characteristic do you think that's going to make him successful?
I think the way he actually puts all his processes together. Like I've got one template that all the guys can look at, and it's got almost anything you could possibly want to use on any job, and it's just a matter of, it's on Excel, just a matter of going through it, ticking them off, because sometimes you'll think you've got everything covered, and unless you actually see it right in front of you, it's very easy to overlook, and you don't have to overlook much for it to start costing you a few dollars. It also makes it very quick. I mean, these days it takes me about half an hour to price a house, you know. Before you'd have been longhand and you've had, God, you'd be going for bloody ages, trying then adding it up, making sure you added it up right. Now with these templates, you know, it adds itself up at the end of the day, so that it's all self-checking.
So you actually had to invest a fair bit of time in building that list, and you'll be adding to it all the time, no doubt.
Yep, I changed it, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So having a pricing template, because that's going to save you a shitload of time, basically.
And time is what you're trying to actually eliminate.
Yep.
It's all downtime, you know, when you could be doing something else like playing golf or finding another.
Yeah, how often do you play golf, mate?
As often as I can, but probably a couple of times a week.
Awesome. Okay. Sounds good. I think one theme that I've got from today, and there's just a couple of questions there that we'll ask in a sec, but one theme I've got from today, Rod, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it's very important to make sure that you make enough time as the owner of the business to do what is most important as a business owner, which is actually to work on growing your business.
Yep.
Is that a really important theme for you?
Absolutely. If you're mulling around trying to worry about too much other trivial little stuff that you could have someone else doing, then you're holding yourself back.
Yep. Okay, awesome. So one last question here, mate, from Peter. If you left for a month's holiday, would the business run without you?
I'm away for 6 weeks every year.
Boom, happy days.